As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, welcome to Pod on the Tyne. It's been an incredible few days for Newcastle. So to celebrate our return to the Champions League, George and Ollie have revisited their binaural Sound of Football project. The next few minutes will sound best on headphones, so you may want to pause and switch over for the full effect. But if you're ready, let's do it. Here's the sound of Milan.
Newcastle United are back. Back in the big time, back in the Champions League, and after a 20-year gap, back in Milan.
I went on a half year from Gatland. The one that I got was 57.
Italiani, Europei, avanti di qua, UK passport, this one.
That's it.
That's just it, isn't it?
The San Siro awaits, but our Tuesday begins in Navigli. The sun is out, our skin is pink and getting pinker, and like the canal beside us, our lunch is liquid. We bump into some new friends.
Okay. Love the podcast, mate. Thank you. Okay.
How the devil are you?
He's had the same jeans on for 4 days now. Go to this coach.
Get that on the podcast, mate.
Flags are draped on bridges. Locals are hawking beer from tubs filled with melting ice. And underfoot, the pathway is sticky and crunchy with broken glass. At 3:55, a migration begins. It's as if a switch has been flicked. Black and white bodies turn towards the metro stop and descend towards the tunnels, snaking and shouting, banging on walls. Trains are full and steaming. Saunas on tracks.
Sanio Zanale,
Il treno espresso delle ore 13:05 per una spessa termina 2 è in arrivo al binario 3, effettua solo servizio di prima classe.
The wrong metro means a long walk. The first glimpse of the San Siro robs you of breath, a gigantic concrete alien in front of us. We pass stalls selling shirts and scarves and legends. Sempre Milan, unico amore sei, always Milan, you are the only one.
No, I think just electronics, battery,
okay.
Keys.
Vada pure.
Grazie.
The teams are announced. Milan fans jeer every Newcastle name bar one. We are back, and so is Sandro Tonali. Just before kickoff, they play our tune. Newcastle press from the off, but there are spaces for Milan to exploit. Pope is diving and fingertipping away, and for a while we are rocking. This is new to us, but Milan understand the Champions League, its rhythms and nuances. Save follows another save, yet with each Milan miss, our outstretched arms stretch wider. The wanker signs are wanked a little harder. Newcastle defend like titans. There is a constant throbbing thrum from their supporters, ultras in the curva, drums banging. Eddie Howe's substitutions have an impact, they bring energy, and our big chance, our only chance, comes right at the end. When the whistle goes, it is us you can hear. Hangovers kicking in, we climb down the Geordie corkscrews outside the stadium. We're kettled and funneled around, and one more kick in the nuts. The trains have stopped running. A long walk stretches ahead. To another metro station, we dissipate and thin out and mingle. We unpick what we have seen and heard and felt. It is a point on the board and a point worth repeating. Newcastle are back and in the Champions League, and if they have ridden their luck tonight, what a ride to be riding. There is more. Much more to come.
Wow, amazing stuff. Here's on the back of my neck, standing up, listening to that. How the devil are you, George Corkin?
Well, as we heard, yes, how the devil are you? That's your catchphrase. Taylor, how the devil are you, Payne? I'm knackered, but I've still got a smile on my face. It was just an incredible experience to be back at the San Siro. There's been lots of sort of... emotion about it has been. Monday nearly broke me. The long day of getting there and sort of hanging around, and you sort of forget how draining and tiring these jaunts away are. But just absolutely incredible to be in Milan, to be back there, and to be in the San Siro. Yeah, just extraordinary. But I hope people listening, if they weren't there, got a flavour of it with that. And yeah. Big ups to Ollie, our producer, for coming over and doing that and not sleeping at all before heading home.
Brilliant stuff. And how the devil are you, Chris Woff? Me and you didn't get the chance to go to Milan this time around, did we? But we got a flavour of it listening to that.
We certainly did. No, it sounded absolutely wonderful. I actually watched the game with our very own Jacob Whitehead, who came round.
Lovely.
Because for him, not only because he's an Everton fan, but also because he was born 3 years ago, he does not know anything about Newcastle's Champions League history, whereas that was very much my sort of formative football years with Sir Bobby Robson and the Champions League and watching it. So for me, it was it was a sort of flashback while also sort of throwing towards the future. I did find the 5:45 kickoff odd. I'll be honest, it was weird to sort of get into it at that sort of time, but it was that sort of made it slightly difficult. It just sort of came upon you all of a sudden. It was a little bit weird.
It messed me up in the fact that when the match finished, I thought it was time for bed, and it wasn't.
Exactly.
My day was just starting at that point, Taylor, because as said on that, as you heard in that audio, you know, you come out of the stadium. I was in the away end, obviously, and Newcastle fans are kept in there for ages, and then, yeah, very, very suspicious how the metros suddenly stop with 4,000 Newcastle fans queuing outside, and then start again half an hour early. So didn't get back to my hotel until very, very late. So yeah, it was a strange kickoff time. I'm glad it was that early, bearing in mind what happened afterwards.
What I also didn't like on TNT Sports, it is now, is that because it was the early kickoff, you're thinking afterwards, I don't always watch post-match things, but I'm thinking, oh, well, it's only whatever 7:30 or whatever, let's watch the after bit. And then it's, oh no, here's Celtic against whoever I don't give a crap about instead. No post-match thing whatsoever. So I didn't enjoy that either. That's just me moaning, so apologies, everyone. But
no, that wasn't great. George, it must have been pretty incredible being over there with the Newcastle fans. Does it bring back memories of European trips gone by for you?
I mean, it did. The sort of the rhythm of it and the sort of in and out of a country and sort of actually remembering that you don't get to see very much of it was kind of very evocative of times gone by.
Yeah.
I think I said on our pod at the start of the week, I was there 20 years ago. I was there in the press box when Newcastle drew 2-2 with Inter Milan and Shearer scored twice. I couldn't remember any of that experience. I've sort of pieced bits of it together and chatting with some of the other reporters who were over there. 20 years ago, the day before the match, Sunderland appointed their new manager and it was Howard Wilkinson of all people. So the whole day before the game was spent writing about Sunderland. So I didn't get to see any of Milan then either. So I think that probably explains why I can't remember much of it. But it was brilliant. And I got a whole new perspective of it from being in the away end. That was such a treat. It was great. But yeah, you know, you sort of, people question whether European football and having these extra games really does add that much to the workload. But if you just put your own experience into it, you know, I'm knackered. It's going to take me weeks to recover from this.
It Are you does comparing just yourself change. To an elite footballer?
Chris, I am, yeah, because I'm also an elite professional at the very, very top of my game.
You are. I've always said it.
You know, representing my club and country in Europe. And I also feel that my performance, my own personal performance, has been a bit of a back-to-the-wall performance. It's been defensive. It's not been...
Were you ever so slightly overawed by the occasion?
I possibly was, Taylor. But yeah, no, just fantastic.
Lovely stuff. Well, I mean, the travel wasn't just a bit of a grind for you either. Newcastle United arrived late, didn't it, Chris? Expecting a penalty from UEFA for a late press conference.
Yes, so if anyone... our older listeners who do remember the previous Champions League campaign, there was the famous pictures of Sir Bobby Robson, the players going out to the stadia, the famous stadia across Europe, the day before game, training on the pitch. Mm. And Newcastle opted against doing that. Now, George informs me that, according to some journalists out there, it's become more normal for at least Premier League sides to do this now, where you don't have, it's not an obligation that you have to go across and give 15 minutes of open training to the media and then train on the pitch. And seemingly Newcastle made the decision that for tactical reasons, because Eddie Howe had such little time from one match to another to get the tactical side of his game, rather than, that was mainly what the training session was on Monday, they'd rather do that on Bent and then fly across to Milan in the afternoon. And you've got to give a press conference at the stadium between 12 p.m. and 8 p.m. on the day before the game. Newcastle were delayed for the best part of 2 hours, and I think it was at 9 o'clock, basically local time, George, they arrived.
I can't even remember what time it was. Yeah, I mean, even though I was there and it was only 2 days ago. But yeah, they were very late. It is interesting that it has changed because, as you say, it used to be that you had to train, do open training on the pitch and then press conferences. And, you know, players would get that experience of being at the stadium and all the rest of it. And yeah, I don't know. I think we should, you know, maybe come on to talk about it. They're not going to get into massive trouble from UEFA or anything like that. I think they'll just get a warning and stuff like that. I totally understand that sort of, you know, desire to do stuff at home and to keep things in-house. I think that was another part of Eddie Howe's thinking. But I guess if you do leave it too late, you're then at the mercy of events. You're at the mercy of weather. There was bad weather.
Yeah.
Will it have done the players much good to have been sitting around on a plane or standing around at an airport for a few hours as opposed to actually getting here and being settled and sort of seeing the scenery? I don't know. It's not the end of the world by any stretch, but I would say that it can't have been ideal preparation.
No. I suppose not training on the pitch does get rid of the risk of somebody sat in the back row of the San Siro with a pair of binoculars with an AC Milan jacket on watching everything that we do, you know?
Yeah, I think that was part of
it's a chance.
Yeah, I think that was genuinely part of the thinking. And that's, so you have to weigh all these things up and balance them, but it meant Monday was a long, long day, certainly for us as journalists who'd not had the luxury of a private jet and all the rest of it, but also for players, so who in the end had to kind of hang around.
You didn't fly by private jet? I thought that's how you got everywhere.
No, I was on very much...
even down the shops?
just commercial flights to and from the airport. So I did then have a chopper to pick me up at Malpensa Airport and ferry me around. So yeah, don't feel too bad for me.
That was a small child's bicycle, was it, George?
Yeah, but I was getting a backer, so I was still being... I was being chauffeured.
As you mentioned, though, as well, George, it did absolutely piss it down on Monday night, didn't it? It was a bit of a storm brewing in Milan. And then it was completely boiling hot for the day of the game, Chris, wasn't it? And the match was played in scorching temperatures, up to nearly 30 degrees, according to the telly, when I was watching the game on the old TNT Sports.
Yeah, and again, you're going into different conditions as to what you've been in on Tyneside. I mean, most of this week, the last week or so, it's been painted down. It hasn't been that sort of warm. It's started to turn towards autumn temperatures. And this is, again, the challenges of Europe, that moving from one sort of set of conditions to another and playing so swiftly after the previous match and having to get used to that. And also the fact that kickoff time was 6:45 local time there, 5:45 time here. Most evening games that you play in the UK would be, other than on a weekend, if you're playing midweek, then you're going to be playing some sort of 7:30 onwards. So these are all sort of little adjustments that the Newcastle squad and the management have to get used to, and that will take a bit of time. It was never just going to be a straightforward, seamlessly moving into that. And to have come out with a draw after everything that's been, I know we're going to get into that, but I think it's very admirable, really.
Yeah.
It was absolutely, well, it wasn't roasting, it was sweltering on Tuesday. I mean, I was so pissed off because I got absolutely drenched on the Monday night waiting outside the San Siro because we were not allowed to kind of get into the press bit until 6 o'clock local time. So we got absolutely fucking drenched in monsoon conditions. And then I got absolutely drenched again through my own sweating. I must have lost about half a stone on Tuesday. And it was that delicious. Sort of, it's that sticky, grimy sort of heat where the sweat just sort of runs down your back and into your underpants and just pools there. I could have wrung out my shirt. Oh. It was horrible.
We're just losing listeners by the millisecond here, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. You really do paint pictures with words, don't you, George? It's delightful, that.
I think that was quite erotic for a... I don't know. I think that might gain
us. Oh, I feel slightly queasy now.
No? Okay. Okay, sorry.
Right then, let's crack on and talk about the football in a moment. Don't forget, you can read George's full recap of the trip to Milan. Subscribe to The Athletic via theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to pay just $1 or £1 a month for 12 months. We'll be back in just a moment once I've been sick in my mouth.
Yeah, crack on is possibly not the correct phrase.
Ah, just images of you having to wring out your underpants in a car park somewhere. Not what we need, is it?
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right, then on to the fun stuff. Well, was it fun, Chris? It wasn't the best performance in the world, was it? But Newcastle managed to come away with a point from the San Siro. Imagine thinking that a year ago. Amazing.
Yeah, and if you look at it purely results-wise, I think it was an absolutely brilliant result. The Champions League, it's cliched, but it really is all about the home form. You try and win your matches at home, and then if you can pick up anything on the road, then really that serves you particularly well in the group stage. And for Newcastle to, against AC Milan, who although AC Milan had been hammered last weekend, they had a 100% record before that, and have been playing well on the whole. And obviously, last season's semi-finalists, Serie A champions 2 years ago, this is a side with, although young and although in transition, they also have some players who've played at the very top level. And it's an imposing arena. The atmosphere, by all accounts, as you can feel it here on the TV, but I know George has said the atmosphere was absolutely fierce.
Yeah,
absolutely. And Newcastle very much ruled their luck first half, didn't have a shot for the first 37 minutes. Should have been probably 3-0 down at half time, but they're through Nick Pope, through some brilliant defence, certainly second half, Newcastle found a way to get through. And to if you just look purely at the result, I think it's really, really good result. Yes, performance is still a lot of concerns really about, I think Newcastle in attack just isn't clicking at the moment. But back-to-back clean sheets, huge, and a point on the road at the San Siro, absolutely massive.
I have to agree, the point is enormous, isn't it? When you look at the bigger picture, that point is really, really important, George, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have a slightly different perspective because of where I was and also because of what I was doing. I mean, I was taking a lot of notes on my phone because I was, you know, I was writing about that whole experience. You know, I wanted it to be about that moment, being back in the Champions League, being back in Milan 20 years on, all the rest of it. And, you know, to kind of, for people who couldn't be there, to try and sort of transport them there into the away end, the sights and sounds, all the rest of it. I don't know. I think normally if I'd been in the press box, you know, what I would have been doing is staring at my laptop, looking down, and sort of what happens at the start of a match tends to inform what you write. I mean, obviously you can be at games and there can be late comebacks and all the rest of it. And Newcastle, you know, they were under the cosh in the first half. I think that's, you know, I don't think that's sort of a controversial thing to say, and I totally accept it. But I think they got better. I think the second half, they grew into it. They grew into the occasion. They grew into the match. And yes, they had to defend for their lives. But I thought their defending was excellent. I think they defended really well. So if you
say it's
not
second half.
Yeah, but I think if you say it's not a great performance, I would say it was a great defensive performance. Now, that's not to say that it was a great defensive performance everywhere on the pitch because I think there are still massive holes in midfield. And I think that's something that does need to be addressed. And it isn't working properly. But what I loved about it was that sense of defiance and resilience and people having to put bodies on the line. There were misplaced passes. There were mistakes. But I think coming away from it, sleeping, and reflecting again, I mean, the point itself is magnificent. I think it's a magnificent point, and I actually think it was a great defensive performance.
Chris is shaking his head a little bit here. I think I kind of understand both sides of the argument with this, but from my point of view, if you've had to defend that much, you can't call it a great performance because there's obviously things going wrong all over the pitch. If you haven't to defend that much and you've had to rely on being lucky to not concede goals.
I think the defenders defended brilliantly. Maybe I'll put it that way. I think Nick Pope and the defenders defended brilliantly. And the players who had to defend, Sean Longstaff, I think was excellent. Did they lay a glove on Milan? No, not until the last minute. And that would have been the funniest, most hilarious 3 points ever witnessed if they'd actually snatched it at the end. But I also do think that there were signs that they were getting to grips with what happened. I do think the substitutes brought energy and a change of impetus. And I think the way that I would look at it, and a feeling which I know is reflected in the dressing room, is that they think that they'll beat AC Milan at home. But there were things, you know, this was a new experience. It was a new experience for players. It was a new experience for fans. It was a new experience for staff. And I think, you know, I think we've almost had that sense. We've just bought Milan's best player off them. We've taken it from them. We've gone to them. So, you know, we're better than them. And I think you got a sense right at the start, whether it was the atmosphere, which Chris talked about, and the atmosphere was incredible. It's like, you know, Newcastle fans are never outsung, but there were moments in that match where you couldn't hear the person sitting next to you because of the general noise around the stadium.
Wow.
And it was intimidating. It was boiling hot. It was new. And you watch Milan and actually you understand that they know what they're doing. You know, they know this competition. They know about the rhythms. They know how to get through matches. I know they didn't win it, so it's not like they know all that stuff perfectly, but it's just different, and it's a different style. It's a different game. And I just think the moment was everything. I mean, it was all about the moment. It was all about that night, getting it out of our systems and then moving on to the next one. But I only felt positive about it at the time. And a couple of days on, I feel more positive about it, not less.
I've already said I think it was a magnificent point. I do think Newcastle were very good defensively second half. I thought that all five of the back five essentially really put in a huge shift, particularly during the second half. But for a team to have had 25 shots, 9 of them on target, I just think it's difficult to say. Particularly first, there was a period between about 15 and 30 minutes when Newcastle could not get out. Mm. Milan just kept coming at them. They couldn't clear corners. It would go out for another corner. Milan just kept coming at them. And it felt at that point as if Newcastle were overawed. And I agree with the resilience to come back and to have got through that and to have walked, come away with a point. I think Newcastle will be better for it. What was my concern was I think that there was almost a sort of reluctance for Newcastle to get the ball down and play. It was like Newcastle went into it. And I think that they may actually approach some European away games similar to this, is that basically that they were more reserved than they usually are. They were less willing to take risks on the ball. And they were picked off a little bit too easily, certainly first half of that. And I think part of that might have been, again, the occasion. We've mentioned that Newcastle didn't come the day before and train the day before. And Eddie Howe was asked about this in his press conference. And Howe and Newcastle's press officer seemed to be getting a bit frustrated that there was a lot of questioning about the fact that Newcastle have arrived late and the storm and the like. And Howe made a comment where he basically was asked about San Siro and he said, "Oh, it's just a pitch. We're not going to make too much of it because it's just a pitch," as if it was like any other pitch you could transport to anywhere. And although I accept the point, this is a man who believes in visualization. Newcastle have trained at St James's Park before some matches because that's to get used to being in that situation.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of this where it's almost like Jacob Murphy, that wonderful moment that you see him stand there as the Champions League anthem is playing. If you haven't seen the clip, look at it on social media. He looks up, he smiles. And it's like him, a boyhood Newcastle fan, absorbing this atmosphere. He had three boyhood Newcastle fans, Dan Byrne, Sean Longstaff and Jacob Murphy, starting this match. And although that was great to see, it's also like, could they have almost got a little bit out of their system being at the San Siro before that part itself? And I felt maybe first half that potentially impacted the way Newcastle were. Mm. And that's partly why maybe they were more standoffish than we expect of them and it took them so long to get in the game.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to change that moment when Jacob Murphy did that, because he was all of us in that moment. And I was in the queue outside the stadium when the teams came out and queuing up to show passports and tickets and all the rest of it. And when the teams were announced, certainly like the buzz around where I was, everybody was just happy for him. And yes, you can sort of look back on and chat about whether that was the right team selection and all the rest of it. I think Eddie Howe wanted to use his pace. I think he thought that could be very important in the match. But the first reaction amongst the people around me was just to be absolutely buzzing for him. A fella who 3 years ago was on loan at Sheffield Wednesday and, you know, didn't know where his future held, who's been part of the rise. Same for him, for Sean Longstaff, for Dan Byrne, for Elliot Anderson, who came on. I mean, it's just like, it was incredible. And you wouldn't want to change Jacob Murphy or the way he performs on the pitch and, you know, mugs to the camera sometimes. I mean, it's all funny. But I do agree with that. And as I said earlier, I think, you know, Newcastle aren't in the Champions League to be tourists. You know, they're not. They want to compete. They want to be part of it. That's what we see. That's what we want. And I think on this occasion, I think to be able to sort of say, look, this is where we are. This is where we want to be. But this is such a huge occasion. It's such a huge arena. Let's get there. Let's have a look. Let's try, as Chris used that phrase, get it out of our system. I think that could have, I think that's what I would have done. Because honestly, when you get there, and I've been there before, it takes the breath away when you see it. The size of the stadium, the way it's built, the way it's positioned, it's enormous. It's this breathtaking arena. And yeah, that's how I would have approached it. Whether that then affects the game or not, who knows? I thought that there was a moment, I thought Newcastle started quite well and there was some kind of good pressing right at the start, and then there was one mistake, and that mistake seemed to sort of infect the whole team for a little bit. It was a bit like what happened at Brighton, I thought, and suddenly there's that sort of uncertainty. I think they recovered very well from it. But absolutely, in terms of if you're looking at it as an overall performance, there was no attacking to speak of. That part of the game wasn't there at all until right at the end. And so there's a huge amount to work on. But I do think that the defenders had to do what they did. They did it magnificently. And you just can't look beyond the point that they've got from it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a reason to be negative. I think it's a reason to be positive. That's just how I look at it.
That's fair play. I think maybe there were a few players who were slightly overawed by it. There were a few who definitely weren't, though. Sean Longstaff put in quite a shift, didn't he, Chris? He was all over the place.
He was a bundle of energy, shows exactly what he brings to his side when he is fully fit, and obviously a slight injury during pre-season affected him in that sense. Howe was asked about Longstaff the other day as well and sort of made this point because he was talking about leaving Longstaff out of the team, and he basically said, well, Sean wasn't fully fit during pre-season. At the end of pre-season, that's why it was the first game of the season. That's partly why I went with the three that he went with, which was Tonali, Joel Linton and Bruno Guimaraes. But he sort of had to cover for the sort of midfield balance, which we keep saying just isn't quite there at the moment. And I think that was on display again. Sandro Tonali still looks like a player who doesn't quite know exactly what his role is. There's so much going into the game.
I agree with that.
He was up for the press conference on Monday, spoke very well, spoke very honestly about how it had been a shock to his system moving across to Newcastle this summer, that he'd left his boyhood club once he found out that it was a big deal for them financially, and it's taken a bit of time to settle. But him and Bruno Guimaraes just seem to want to occupy the same positions, or almost, it's either that, they're both in the same position, or they almost seem to be miles away from one another. Sandro Tonali at times looked like he was a left winger pushing forward, and he didn't really have many touches. Jacob mentioned this in his live analysis straight after. He didn't really have many touches in the middle of the pitch, and certainly the first half, I thought, almost bypassed him.
Yeah.
But Sean Longstaff, tireless energy, obviously had the chance right at the end, the shot which the keeper makes a very good save from, when Newcastle could have nicked all 3 points. But beyond that, I thought his defensive work was excellent. You could just see he was noticeable in terms of, you could see he was always in the round, he was busy, he was trying to positively influence the match. I didn't think that Tonali was terrible or that Bruno Guimaraes was terrible. I just don't think it's quite clicking yet in that regard.
I totally agree. I mean, I thought Sean was magnificent and, yeah, tried to be everywhere. The kind of interesting thing from where we were at one end of the pitch, incredibly high up, you just got to see the space in midfield that there was left from, and it was enormous.
Big channels and all over, wasn't
there? Yeah. Tonali, to me, I'm watching him, you can see he's a superb player. You can see, again, I'm not sure he's playing, I don't think he's playing badly either. But it's a bit like with Bruno. Bruno was a lot better against Brentford because suddenly he was in a kind of midfield where there was much more certainty, I thought. And it's not to say that it won't come with time, but it's been such an effective unit, that Newcastle midfield, where everybody knows what they're doing, where they're supposed to be and all the rest of it. Tonali has just changed that flow somehow. And there isn't the same sort of aggression on and off the ball that Newcastle had when it was Longstaff, Bruno, Jolinton, or, you know, or Willock in there as well. And it's just not quite there. And so also, when I talk about the defenders and how well they defended, there was very little protection from them in certain bits of that midfield. So they were having to throw themselves at everything, and they were forced into mistakes sometimes because they were getting very, very little help from the players in front of them. Because in the sense that the ball had been given away, or they'd given up all that space. So I do think that's something to factor in. But no, I thought Sean was brilliant.
Nick Pope, Chris, as well, followed up his clean sheet against Brentford with another one in the San Siro. Made some good saves early on, arguably kept Newcastle in the game with a couple of big stops. He had a great game as well, looked assured, didn't he?
He really did. I thought that the save from Olivier Giroud in particular, when the ball bounced down and he sort of rushed out and stuck his arm up, was probably the save of the match. He had a couple of more comfortable ones, but also a couple of other ones where he had to tip it over the bar or sort of punch it away. Particularly first half, he kept Newcastle in the match because at one point it did look like AC Milan were going to overwhelm them. And thankfully, due to Nick Pope and the rest of the defence, that didn't happen. He's been under a little bit of pressure, I think, in terms of obviously the mistake at Brighton, and have his levels been as high as they were before the international break, before the change in the seasons. But he's now got back-to-back clean sheets. That's great for his confidence, great for the back four's confidence. And to build from that, that's when Newcastle's success was built on last season, that they did keep a heck of a lot of clean sheets. They need to this year as well. And to have Nick Pope in that sort of form, that's exactly why Newcastle are in the Champions League in the first place, and it's great to see him actually perform that level at this very top level.
Absolutely. George, let's move on to one of our favourite topics in the world, Mr. Coolness personified. He looked incredible the other night, and that was Kieran Trippier. You can tell that there's a man there who's played an awful lot of Champions League football and an awful lot of high-level football. He was superb.
Yeah, if you're talking about players who might have been overawed by the occasion or the match or the opponents or the arena, you're good not Lord. Talking about yeah. Kieran Trippier. He was absolutely outstanding. An outstanding performance, but also, yeah, just looked like he belonged. He knew, he did know how to deal with that match. He did know how to deal with it. Just full of leadership, but just some incredible moments as well. And yeah, belonged, you know, and that will be that will be of vital importance to Newcastle moving forward. Someone who's been there and done that. People will look at him and, you know, they will rise and grow because of the way he plays and the calmness that he brings to it. I just thought he was absolutely exceptional. You know, the player,
yeah, he was.
The player that Newcastle bought, the leader they bought, and yeah, a bit of everything. He was incredible.
And you have to say as well, Chris, up against arguably one of the most direct and quick and scary left sides in European football with Hernandez and Rafael Leao there just screaming at him the whole game. And he handled them brilliantly, didn't he?
It did. It was sort of fascinating how both sides approached that, because Leao was almost coming inside at times to try yeah. and sort of both on and off the ball to try and get through the heart of Newcastle. And when Newcastle had the ball, Trippier basically went on his bike and was almost going as like a sort of wing-back sort of position and trying to push on. Newcastle, unfortunately, didn't find him frequently enough with possession, but it was that sort of both sides recognising how important that basically key player for each side. You'd say Kieran Trippier is up there with Newcastle's, and Rafael Leao is definitely AC Milan's, and yet almost the focus was shifted to elsewhere. It was sort of a fascinating way, both on the ball, but I thought off the ball, he did show his experience. He got Newcastle through that, and that's exactly why he was brought in. It's to make Newcastle, we use the term elite, well, he is elite player, he has elite mentality,
yeah.
And he's driving those standards, and he's very much Howe's on-field general doing that.
Absolutely. Listener as well, at Mr. Brown on Twitter, enjoyed this particular moment. Trips sprinting to perfectly execute a world-class sliding tackle against one of Europe's most dangerous forwards, standing to retrieve the ball mid-slide, then releasing the ball to Bruno, who then promptly just boots the ball out of play. But that moment, though, let's not dwell on the Bruno part of that particular story, but that piece of play, George, I actually got off my couch in my living room and stood and applauded that. I wish there was a way he could have known that I was doing that for him.
Well, but maybe he does
now. I couldn't stay on my seat.
No,
you know?
No.
I couldn't stay on my seat. I thought it was one of the best things I'd seen on a football pitch for years.
Yeah, he was.
It was so good.
He was everywhere, and like with all of those things, had to be timed absolutely perfectly. I mean, but there was so much of that during the game. I mean, Newcastle players, Newcastle defenders making last ditch blocks and tackles. And yeah, okay, if you're having to do that, it means that you know, you're not having everything your own way. But I just, there was that sort of mentality that they were determined to come away with a point. And I loved, you know, I take pleasure in that. I think you can take pleasure in that. It wasn't the way that they wanted the game to go. But when you are under the cosh like that, you've got to try and get something out of it and move on. And they did it, and they did it very well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Chris, let's talk about Dan Byrne as well. A great game, according to some. profligate with the ball and a bit wasteful, according to others. Where do you lie on the Dan Burn debate with this one?
Well, I thought second half in particular, he was like the rest of the back four, as George said, or back five, sorry. I thought he was magnificent. I thought, again, a lot of headed clearances from set pieces and just making those key sort of blocks. Yeah, on the ball, I didn't think he was necessarily great, but I didn't think Newcastle in general were great. They just couldn't progress the ball up the field in any effectual way. And so if you look at it, and how did Newcastle manage to get a positive result both against Brentford last weekend and against AC Milan? It's because they kept two clean sheets. And so Dan Burn was part of that. And I know that some of his family members were at San Siro, and they were very, very proud to see their son, who talks about watching Andy Griffin score against Juventus at St. James's Park, for him to be at San Siro and to be playing, a huge moment. But as George said, he's not there as a tourist. He's there to try and impress and to try and make it to perform at the highest level. And yes, maybe on the ball, yes, wasn't great, as the rest of Newcastle players probably weren't. But I thought that defensively, I thought he was excellent, particularly second half.
Yeah, I just won't hear a word of criticism. I mean, not from that performance. Yes, the ball was given away on a couple of occasions by Newcastle players, but, you know, it wasn't that end of the pitch that was the problem. It was the other end of the pitch. It was midfield, where Newcastle didn't make headway. And as I said before, Newcastle's defenders didn't get enough protection from the people ahead of them. It had to be a collective effort. Of course it did, for them to come away with anything. But I thought Dan was magnificent. I thought the rest of the defence was magnificent. And they were the leaders. You know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you get performances, doesn't go the way you want it to, and so people have to step up. But you can't knock any member of that back four, back five, for the way they played the other night. They had to absolutely be on top of their game. They had to do what, you know, stick to the stuff that they were good at. And I just thought they all chipped in. And as Chris said, we've needed this part of Newcastle's game to come back after a long spell that they've not had quite this sense of impregnability. I thought he was tremendous. Won't hear a word against him.
That's fair. Chris Alexander-Isak, he was clearly completely knackered by the time he came off the pitch. He was quite ineffectual during the game, wasn't he? He seemed a bit isolated, and he looked like he was getting a bit frustrated, giving the ball away a bit. We've not seen him at his best just yet, have we, this season?
No, and I don't think Newcastle have, other than the first game of the season, I don't think Newcastle have found their centre-forward often enough. I have to be honest, after the Brentford game, although I thought Callum Wilson was good and that he took his goal very well, I thought it was almost some of the coverage afterwards, in my opinion, was almost overinflated as to how good he was. Because, and I don't mean that in terms of his own personal football, I just didn't think Newcastle found him very often against Brentford. He couldn't be really good because Newcastle didn't find him. And it's been the same for Alexander Isak in recent weeks, and Isak is partly culpable in that. He kept coming deep to try and get the ball because he just wasn't seeing enough of it. And Newcastle didn't release him up. There was a couple of times where he could have been released in behind, and I think it was Gordon at one stage, second half, attacked down the left, but his ball was poor and Isak was forced a little bit wide. And yeah, it just isn't quite working. I think it's only one goal in his last something like 11 starts, is it? Something like that. I don't know the exact statistic, but he isn't one game that he scored in, because he scored twice on the opening of the season, but it's just not quite working at the moment in terms of that fluidity in attack and Newcastle find the centre forward. So I do feel for Isak and I do feel for Wilson in that sense, because I don't think it's only their fault, but I also think that they themselves will look at it and think, I should be in the game far more than I am, and I need to be. That was his night to try and grasp that shirt, starting shirt back, and maybe Callum Wilson will be feeling that he should be back in the team this weekend.
Yeah, possibly. Wilson came on, didn't he, George? You said that you thought the subs worked. Wilson, Miggy, Anderson and Barnes all came into the game. Barnes, of course, was involved with that chance at the end for Sean Longstaff. How do you think they did, the lads who came on?
Yeah, I thought they did. I thought it brought Newcastle more energy and impetus. It was boiling hot, as we said at the start, and so I think those changes had to happen. But they seemed to sort of add to Newcastle, not the other way. I thought, you know, Almiron, he's had a tough start to the season, but his running, I thought, was important in that last spell. And I think they all contributed. Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about being fluent and attacking and being sort of more adventurous and all those parts of the game we want to see. It's just not there yet and it's not clicking.
Yeah.
And the strikers, again, totally agree with Chris. I watched Brentford at the weekend. Wilson, that wasn't a vintage Wilson performance. What I loved about Wilson was the coolness that he dispatched his penalty and all the rest of it. I wouldn't have wanted anybody else to do that. And I also think he deserved to start. I thought that was the right call. If he wasn't going to start after playing against Brighton and after coming on against Brighton and scoring, then, you know, when would he start? So I thought that was the right decision, and that rotation was all right. But yeah, I mean, there's been no service for the strikers, and so it's not working. That midfield kind of stuff isn't gelling in both senses. It's not gelling enough defensively, and it's not gelling enough in an attacking sense either. But
yeah
I thought the subs came on. I thought they contributed and brought energy, and Newcastle ended pretty strongly.
They did. You know what? We're going to move on in just a minute, but I keep coming back to it and I keep thinking about it. And I was all night on the day of the game. I kept having flashbacks to that Sean Longstaff chance at the end, the shot straight at the keeper. I jumped up off my chair. I must have been about 4 or 5 foot in the air. The dog shit himself in the corner with the noise that I made. We nearly snatched it. We nearly took all 3 points. It would have been one of the biggest shithousing European victories that anyone's ever seen. We were so close, George.
It was
nearly there, wasn't it?
It was that thing in the away end. It was like everybody's hands were on their heads, but everybody was smiling at the same time. It was like, oh, fucking hell. That would have been so hilarious. It would have been like
it would have been
the biggest daylight robbery ever, but it wasn't to be. But again, good to see Newcastle sort of end strongly. And so I think that sort of lingers. I think that sort of lingers a bit. It was not to be. They didn't deserve it. They wouldn't have deserved it, but it would have been hilarious.
Yeah. Right then, let's look ahead ever so slightly, Chris. Sheffield United next. And as we said before, a lot of those lads were out on their feet at the end, so it's nice to have 5 days to recover until the next match, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just trying to look at the performance.
It just comes natural to you. You're a miserable bastard.
But you are. So that's how it's
you've turned into me. Misery was my business. That was my business. You're desperate to be like me.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
I'm full of joy. How did I get to be the joyful optimistic one of us?
I'm trying to take the emotion out of Tuesday's before. And if you look at certainly an hour of Tuesday, I still think there's the same issues that there've been so far this season for Newcastle, certainly on the ball.
I agree.
I still have concerns. And I think the fact that they got through it and they got a point is wonderful, as I said before. But I don't think I don't think Eddie Howe will be looking through rose-tinted glasses. I think they'll be looking back at it and thinking,
no,
there is so much still to improve here. And to go to Sheffield United on Sunday, Sheffield United started the season actually, in terms of the way they're playing, quite well. And it's a difficult place to go 4:30 on a Sunday live on Sky Sports in the UK. I think this will be a test for Newcastle, and we find out how far they have actually come this week. And we're going to have to see far more from them in attack, because they can't just keep every week just about getting through.
Yeah.
They've managed to get 2 very positive results, and this week could turn into a phenomenal one if they manage to get certainly a win there. But even I think a draw wouldn't be a poor result at going to Bramall Lane. But I just think we need to see more from them, and to have, it's again that test of how you turn around after having a midweek Champions League game. The concern as well is that you think the next 2 weeks going on, they've then got Man City midweek in the cup, they then play the following weekend against Burnley, they then the week after play PSG midweek. And Eddie Howe's going to have to be factoring all of that in. I think we'll probably see Livermento and Hall for the first time, potentially next week against Man City. Again, even that, me thinking about that, is that seems like maybe, I know Man City are going to play their reserves, but an opportunity missed to a certain degree, because you're going to have to play basically a semi-reserve side against Man City. But that's because you have these other priorities. And I just think that tinkering at the moment is necessary for Newcastle, but at a time when they're searching and scratching and trying to find some form, I don't necessarily feel that positive about it all and think that that's necessarily going to drag it all out. I'm just being honest, from what I've seen in the last few games, I don't see the attack suddenly clicking. I hope I'm completely wrong and I hope it does. It just seems wrong at the minute. Yeah. It just doesn't seem right.
I thought you were going to be a bit more miserable than that. I mean, so that's fine. I think that's just standard. That was just sort of standard misery. That's okay. Yeah. No, I agree with pretty much all of that. I do think that they're one win away from it being an absolutely brilliant week for them, just as you said. And I do think the point I was going to make is the same as yours, that, you know, the next couple of weeks are absolutely fascinating. When suddenly the squad has to get used and has to get juggled around, they've spent a huge amount of money on Livramento, and they will be spending a lot of money on Hall next summer, and so players they've just not seen at all so far. And you know, the wisdom of those players has always been, or otherwise of those players, has always been that this is a long-term thing, that, you know, Newcastle have kind of effectively nailed down their full-back positions for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You know, that's the theory. With Trippier playing like that, you know, he's not going to give up his place so soon. And so, you know, we get back into that debate that we were having straight after the transfer window. Should they have done more for now? Should they have put those resources in for now? Anyway, we have to see those players against Man City.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, the team is going to be switched around and changed. I'm not saying that Milan away has answered any questions particularly. I'm just taking it as a standalone occasion, defensive performance, something that the club had to go through, wanted to go through, and I think came through really well. But yeah, it's massive. The next couple of weeks, it's a proper test of stamina and squad and rotation and good decisions. Yeah, so we'll have to see how they get on. But I think it's, yeah, and they're not, you know, they haven't clicked. So that's the bit we're still waiting for.
Are you and Jacob going to have rotation as well, George? Or are you just going? Are you flogging yourself?
I'm not flogging myself. No, Milana's almost killed me, Chris. So, whilst I'm very, very jealous, you and Taylor are going across to Dortmund. I need to rest. I need about 3 weeks off now. So no. So Jacob's at Bramall Lane. I'm doing Man City. I think we'll both be doing Burnley, and then yeah. So we'll wait and see after that.
It has been a very hectic week, but also a historic, monumental week for the club and for its fans as well. You have to remember, the fans travelled in numbers, and according to the Trust today as well, the fans have been praised by the Milan authorities for their behaviour over there. George, you were down there, and Ollie was down there, our producer as well, down by the canal in Milan. What was it like over there? We haven't really spoke about that side of things. What was the feeling like? What was the atmosphere like? It looked incredible on the photos and videos and social media.
Yeah, it was amazing. And obviously the other thing to mention is that, you know, we'd known there'd been that horrible, terrible, very distressing incident on Monday night when Eddie Mackay, yeah, a Newcastle fan, had been attacked with a machete and he was injured and got stabbed. And great news that he's got back home. So obviously we send him all our very best, to him and his family and friends.
Absolutely,
and
yeah,
you know, not downplaying that at all, because that sounded like an absolutely horrific incident and you know, totally and utterly unacceptable and stuff that you would never want to see and read about and all the rest of it. But no, I mean, I think, you know, the next day going down to the canal and that district, I had a little bit of trepidation in the sense that you wondered if that would have kind of seeped into the mood around it, if there would be sort of aggression.
Like soured things.
Obviously it did sour things, but yeah, if it had somehow kind of changed the mood and if there would be loads and loads of police around and it was all kind of threatening and ugly and stuff. And it just wasn't like that at all. People were determined to have a good time. I mean, it was carnage down there, but it was kind of Geordie carnage. It was very good natured. I'm sure if you lived around there, it might have been a bit of a challenge that day to kind of get around. There was one little incident that I wrote about where this woman was walking down one of the main streets that kind of come to the canal, and she had this big golden retriever with her, and a Newcastle fan, topless Newcastle fan who'd had a few drinks, said to her, "No, no, no, glass, glass." And he was like pointing down, and there was a bit of glass on the floor where someone had dropped a bottle. And, you know, she was like saying in Italian, I've got to go through this way with my dog. I've got to go through. And, you know, they were having this conversation, couldn't understand a word. And in the end, the lad gave the woman his bottle and he took her dog and carried the dog through the crowd, got them to the end of it and got them to the canal. And it was like lovely. You know, it was like really lovely. And
that's lush.
Yeah, it was very, very drunken. Sort of overheard a conversation as we were walking towards the metro. One lad was saying, oh man, they've run out of beer. If they've run out of beer now, what's it going to be like at 9 o'clock when they all kind of turn back? And so, you know, drank Milan dry,
yeah,
which of course they had to do a little bit because there was no beer for sale, no alcoholic beer for sale inside the stadium. But no, it was just a really good atmosphere. You know, you have to throw yourself into that kind of stuff because it's the metros are full and full of Geordies banging on the windows and singing songs and sweating profusely and smelling, and that was just me. But no, it was great. So yeah, hopefully everybody got home safe, and I hopefully pretty much everybody had a good time. It was a great atmosphere, and it was just a delight to be part of.
Oh, I can't wait for Dortmund. It's going to be great fun, Chris, even if I am going with the podcast's new resident miserable bollock. I hope you're going to be a bit more chipper when we're in Germany, Chris, because there's just sausage and beer everywhere.
That's the only reason he's going. It's like right from the start, which game would you like? Dortmund. He just wants sausages. I hope he cheers up with a bit of sausage. Have you not had a sausage for a while, Chris?
To be honest, actually, I haven't. It must be withdrawal symptoms.
Sausage withdrawal.
I'm very much looking forward to Dortmund. I've been to a lot of grounds in Germany, had a lot of sausage and a lot of beer, but I've not actually been to Dortmund, so I am very much looking forward to that. So,
stick with me, kid. We'll be all right. Right, then, let's finish off there. Get in touch, if you like. We're all on Twitter. We're quite easy to find. The show is as well, at Pod on the Tyne. And if you hate Twitter with a passion, like I know some of you do, you can email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Right, that's it. George, thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Upbeat, that's no problem at all. I should also, just before we go, should shout out everybody who came over and said hello and said they enjoyed the podcast. Thank you very much. You're all legends. That was great. That was very, very humbling as we were wandering around with Ollie, and lots of people came over and said lovely things. That was great. We really love,
nice one.
Really love doing what we're doing. And of course, the people who pay to subscribe to The Athletic, that's what allows us to do the stuff we do. So thank you very much indeed for your support. We're in the Champions League. We're back, baby. It was absolutely, absolutely 100% mint.
Excellent. And thank you very much, Chris Woff, for your time as well.
You're very welcome. And I just want to fight back against the negativity. I think I'm a realist. That's what it is.
You want to fight back against your own negativity? You want to fight back against the negativity about your negativity? What are you on about? Is that a double pivot?
Double bollock. Just let it go, Chris. Just let it
go. Back against the negativity. That's one of the most astonishing things I think I've heard. It's your negativity.
Oh, dear me. Right then. Thanks very much for listening to Pod on the Tyne. From everybody here, have a good week. Look after yourselves, and we'll speak to you on Monday. Take care. Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao.
The Athletic.